Blog Talk Radio.
A little bit about that as well, but she'll talk about what Nakba is and why it's an important anniversary for Palestinians.
Yeah, and with that, we're going to
go right to the news. There was a little thing on Ron Paul. I was wondering.
I'd like to bring that up in a minute here, but there's another one. It was HARP manipulates time.
Oh no, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting article.
Hmm.
And speaking about Israel tonight, we wanted to say U.S. congressman introduced visa waiver for Israelis.
Oh, so they can go back and forth?
Yeah, they get a 90-day without any visas. They can visit for 90 days.
Not right.
No. And nobody else can do that. But I wanted to... let's do the Ron Paul thing. It's about 5 minutes. But we can get a little update on what's going on with his campaign.
Hmm.
I think that's kind of a good thing.
Keep going.
Hang on a second. I will find it in one
here
second.
It
here it is.
Ron Paul suddenly seems electable.
Family friendly version.
I'm not sure what that means.
Let's go on with it.
Let's see.
Yeah. And the pupil is
ready. Educate, please. Panel of experts here, and I say that with quote the rabbit.
Absolutely. Well, we need a health reform that allows her to buy in, and Dr. Paul's right.
Ron Paul makes very good points. I concur.
I agree with Ron Paul.
Congressman Paul was right on that.
Congressman Paul, you're correct when it comes to allowing the states to compete with each other.
I am thankful to Representative Ron Paul for his consistent and steady pressure on the Federal
Congressman Paul got me really intrigued with the whole the Federal Reserve. Congressman Paul is the individual on the stage that got me most interested in a subject that I found to be quite interesting and at the root of a lot of the problems that we have, and I thank you for that.
I'd like you to comment on this. Is this completely off base, or is there something really to this? Every time we see the cost of living going up, that we indirectly are paying a tax.
Congressman, I couldn't agree with you more that inflation is a tax.
You got to hand it to Ron Paul.
Ron Paul does make a legitimate point.
I have to agree with Ron Paul. I agree with him on a lot.
And basically, I agreed with Ron Paul on everything.
There's only one guy who's outspoken against this kind of stuff, and it's Congressman Ron Paul. He's been against this idea of a national security state for a long time. Ron Paul says this is, in essence, he says, this is madness. We don't need another war. We don't want another war. We can't afford another war. About that, my own personal opinion is he's probably right.
As Ron Paul said, you have to let the market clear so it can recover.
Against the Patriot Act like Ron Paul is, because Ron Paul is exactly right on it.
When you get into those libertarian principles, I agree with 95% of what you said.
Pretty good.
You, sir, are looking more and more right every day.
Well, there's only one person that I like at all, and that's Ron Paul.
You had made a contribution in 2007 to
Ron Paul.
You did.
I like him. I really get a kick out of Ron Paul. I really like a lot of what he says.
You know, I like Ron Paul. I'd vote for Ron Paul.
Ron Paul is, he's talking about fiscal responsibility.
Who do you support for president?
Ron Paul.
He represents the Constitution.
Oh, I like Ron Paul. What's interesting about Ron Paul is he has a solid and consistent follower.
One of the things about Ron Paul that always amazes me is when I come to a debate like this, the only signs I see are the Ron Paul people out there. clear. He ignites an enthusiasm with the number of people. That's very exciting.
I just want to say, having campaigned during the last presidential election, you had the most enthusiastic supporters of anybody I ever saw.
I love to hear that.
Your message obviously resonated with a lot of people.
Thank you. Why do you, a Democrat and a former leader of Democrats, have you decided that Ron Paul is the president we need?
Because Ron Paul is very frank and honest. I saw him this week, Wednesday night in Portsmouth, and last night in Laconia. He's not an afraid person at all. He's not hedging his bets. He says what he believes.
Time has come around to the point where the people are agreeing with much of what I've been saying for 30 years.
I'm happy to, and I also want to attest, I'm confident that Dr. Paul is quite ready. Watching him campaign, he's in great shape.
I'm going to tell you about this guy, Ron Paul. He's fantastic. This guy, he's a Republican, and he says, listen, I become president, I'm taking us out of Iraq. I'm taking us out of everywhere in the world. He goes, what good has it done us being in these Middle Eastern countries?
They all hate us.
He goes, they hate us, taking us out of all these wars, and we're done. He goes, and I'm not an isolationist. I'm not afraid to use the military where it's needed. But he said, to sit in here and extend these wars, drain the economy, he goes, and if we stay or we leave, the same thing happens. Nothing. So let's leave. And people love this guy when he talks. He makes sense.
This is evidenced by the fact that Dr. Paul raised more money in a single day than any other presidential candidate. He's the only one who stood up for us about the FCC, saying that they should have complete freedom on the radio.
Really?
And he's for abolishing the FCC.
Uh-oh. I just might have to vote Ron Paul.
He's a guy from Canada. He's a Canadian citizen. He's trying to get Ron Paul elected. So I don't know. I just happened to hear the guy talk, and everything he said I kind of agreed with, which was weird because I don't know anything about the dude.
That was Ron Paul, D12, Restore America Now.
Yeah, a lot of people support him.
I do. I really do. In fact, I was talking to a bus driver, Uli, today, and he says, man, we're doomed, man. Said, oh, what do you got? He says, you got this jerk Romney and a jerk Obama. I said, you got to go Ron Paul. He says, yeah. He says, yeah, I think so. I said, you're right in Ron Paul. He goes, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So we got to talk to people and tell them, you know, if Ron Paul isn't on a ballot, let's write him in. That's the revolution. That's the real revolution. You know, fuck this system. You know, let's go with somebody who's out there. And I don't know. That's my theory anyway. Ron Paul, I'll be writing him in if he's not on the ballot for this great election.
I think he could win against Obama.
Oh, he could. He definitely could. He could blow Romney right out the door too.
Oh, here's an interesting article.
Yeah, I wanted to read this before I bring up Gail.
Harp manipulates time.
Yeah.
Now we know Harp manipulated weather.
It's kind of a longer article, and but it's something that we have a few minutes here that I want to maybe we can. For those of you familiar with HAARP, it's the great system, all right, that modulates weather. Brilliant physicist established a revolutionary paper citing 30 other scientific papers that reveal HAARP has incredible power far beyond what most investigators of high-frequency energy technology suspect. Dr. Fran DiAquino asserts a full functional HAARP network activated globally can not only affect weather and geophysical events, but influence space and gravity, even time itself. Now, the network is almost complete with the activation of the newest HAARP facility at the bottom of the world, the desolate and alien Antarctic. Will the time, will the masters of time,
masters
of HAARP, become
masters
of HAARP time
become
too?
The masters of time.
Right. And, factions of the three of the largest governments in the world, the United States of America, Russia Federation, and the Republic of China, may be cutting orders to eliminate a man who they see as one of the most dangerous in the world. Not only is he not the world's most hunted multinational terrorist, nor even a mad scientist with a new virus, that can wipe out humanity. The most dangerous man in the world may be Brazilian physicist Dr. Fran de Aquino. De Aquino hasn't developed a death ray or obtained secret launch codes to the nuclear world missiles. He's done something potentially much worse. He spilled the scientific and technical beans of the greatest secret in the world, the ultimate purpose of HARP. HARP, High Frequency Auroral Research Program, now has installations crisscrossing the world and extend from pole to pole. The Antarctic facilities are near completion.
Dr. Aquino, whose paper, High Power ELF Radiation Generated by Modulated HF Heating of the Atmosphere Can Cause Earthquakes, Cyclones, and Localized Heating, lifts the veil hiding the HARP wizards. And unlike the erstwhile Wizard of Oz, the HARP wizards have some real power at their disposal. The physicist's solely work, citing 30 other scientific papers, many peer-reviewed, reveals much more than the incredible title the paper promises. Most researchers of HARP suspected for some time that the technology can trigger earthquakes and ignite hurricanes. Dr. Aquino's paper tends to confirm those suspicions, but goes further. Utilizing high frequencies, he says, HARP can modify, even control gravity by blocking gravity waves locally. Dr. Aquino claims heavy objects can be moved, even transported, by creating gravitational shielding. But the scientists stress HARP can do even more. The ELF technology can generate gravitational shielding mantles, which are made by layers of high dielectric strength semiconductor sandwiched by two metallic foils and insulation layers. The gravitational shielding mantle can be made so it is only 1 millimeter in thickness. Dr. Aquino's contention is actually supported by the experiments of another physicist, Dimitrio Stavros from the TEI Athens Department of Electrical Engineering in Greece. Stavros successfully demonstrated an electromagnetic interaction with the gravity field. From his abstract, let's see what this means really. From his abstract, the period of the pendulum, that's not going to mean anything to us. Let's go down here. Yet most astounding of all Dr. Aquino's assertions that the ultimate power of HARP is its compatibility to warp time. Time dilation, a relativistic effect described in Einstein's special theory of relativity, is created by mass approaching the speed of light and affecting gravity by warping space and time. HARP can control space and time. Dr. Aquino's paper shows that when subject to a uniform ELF electromagnetic field, mass can be transitioned to a different time relative to outside observers. It is done artificially and at will. The analogy he draws envisions an ocean-going vessel. He explains the ship is made of steel. When subjected to a uniform ELF electromagnetic field with intensity and frequency, the ship will perform a transition in time to another time. It is important to note that the electromagnetic field, besides being uniform, must remain with the ship during the transition to the new time. If it is not uniform, each part of the ship will perform transitions to different times in the future. In order for the electromagnetic field to remain with the ship, it is necessary that all parts which are involved with the generation of the field stay inside the ship. If persons are inside the ship, they will perform transition to different times in the future because their conductivities and densities are different.
And they show a picture of the USS Eldridge at sea, and that's the one that was transformed in the Philadelphia experiment.
Remarkably, this is almost an exact scenario described by the alleged witness, Carlo Lendi, of the Philadelphia experiment, now widely regarded as a fabricated story. The early 40s U.S. Navy experiment, allegedly co-named Project Rainbow, never actually took place. Believers of the story, however, claim that the famed inventor and electrical genius Nikola Tesla assisted in the experiment that involved the naval escort vessel named the USS Eldridge. The purpose was to create invisibility, but ended tragically when the ship was spatially transported and parts of it were trapped in temporal anomalies. It is strongly suspected that much of the HARP technology is Tesla's work, updated and improved and built upon the latest 21st century scientific knowledge. So just what will HARP be used for? Weather wars, triggering geophysical events, the manipulation of gravity, warping space-time? Some think the technology is already driving people mad. The most dangerous man alive, Dr. Fran Aquino, claims it's all of the above.
Okay, and that's essentially what it's all about, guys. There's a cloud. Look at that. Energy vortex warps cloud.
Mm-hmm.
There's not.
It's probably Tesla's work.
We had Al Bielek on.
Mm-hmm.
Al Bielek was in, and he was the engineer on that ship.
Mm-hmm.
So, to say that it didn't happen, I guess that's
well, a lot of people say a lot of things that aren't true.
They sure do. They want you to believe it. Bunch of crap. But anyway, we're going to call Gail Townsend at this point. We're going to be discussing some Palestinian issues.
Okay, we'll just go ahead.
Oh, okay.
What did she say?
we were planning on talking to you a week ago, which was the anniversary of the Nakba. And that's certainly worthwhile still talking about why that's important to Palestinian people and how the celebration of that event was in Palestine. So would you talk about that for a little bit first, Gail?
I will, but, you know, it's really, it's not a celebration. It's like the biggest tragedy that has ever happened to Palestinians, and basically it's the equivalent of the Holocaust in Germany, in
mm-hmm.
Europe, for the Jews, because that was when over 800,000 Palestinians were ethnically cleansed from their homes in Palestine, and those. What is that noise?
I just tried to up my amplifier here.
He just turned up his volume.
A little bit there, yeah.
Uh huh. Okay, I'm sorry. So that was when, you know, over 800,000 Palestinians were expelled from Palestine. They were ethnically cleansed. David Ben Gurion, the first Zionist prime minister, declared Israel as a state on
mm-hmm.
May 15th in 1948 after having started the expulsion of Palestinians, the indigenous people, after the United Nations had voted by a narrow majority to partition historic Palestine. That was supposed to be a starting point. It didn't mean that it was a fait accompli. Obviously, there were supposed to be negotiations about that. The Palestinians didn't agree to the partitioning of their country, but Ben-Gurion and the Zionists took that as their green light to establish the State of Israel. And so, you know, very much like America in a certain way, Israel was born in war and genocide and ethnic cleansing. And so that's the legacy that it carries,
There were commemorations of that all around Palestine. Is that correct?
Yes, except that it's the Israelis, I believe, passed a law last year forbidding commemorations of the Nakba, and this is really a terrible thing. And it's part of the Zionist effort to erase the memory of Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to steal the land. They also want to just wipe out any historical information, but that's impossible. You know, it's just not possible.
Well, you know what fascinates me, Gail, and you're very much involved with this because you're a journalist for Indian Country Today, and we wiped out 200 years of genocide to the American Indian, almost all
similar pattern.
Yeah, I mean, it turned it into it's not even a history course anymore. You know what I mean? So we've kind of wiped that whole thing out of our own history.
And the history we do have has been rewritten.
Oh, totally. You know.
Right. Well, that works pretty good for white people, but
yeah, absolutely.
It hasn't been erased from the memory of the indigenous people of Turtle Island.
Oh no, it hasn't.
North America.
But unfortunately, it's like everything else. It's not a concern by our government or the majority of the people anymore.
Now, you were at the United Nations this past week and went to several meetings there. Can you give us some highlights of what you heard and observed there?
Sure. Well, what was happening was the annual meeting of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and that body was established, I think, around 2000, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have my dates exactly down, but yeah, it must have been 2000 because it was the 11th session, and it was established basically after indigenous people. Oops, that's my phone. Indigenous people went to Geneva in 1977 to demand their rights, basically to demand that America stand by the treaties that it had signed, and basically looking for human rights. And so they set up this permanent forum on indigenous issues, and one of the Onondaga leaders, Chief Orrin Lyons, excuse me, who's a faith keeper of the Onondaga Nation, always jokes about it and says, "See, we're still issues. We're not. The UN body doesn't call us the permanent forum on indigenous peoples. It's issues." Anyway, so they meet every year, and the global indigenous community was responsible over 30 years for developing the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples with an S, which the United Nations General Assembly adopted on September 13th in 2007. And there were only four countries that voted against it, and they were the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. Interestingly enough, four settler colonist countries that have large indigenous populations with land claims, of course.
Yeah.
Because it's always about land, right?
Yeah.
So then Australia, I think New Zealand adopted it, and then Australia adopted it. Canada adopted it in 2010, November. And finally, the Obama administration, well, I can't say adopted it. Those other nations actually didn't adopt it because they missed their chance to adopt it at the General Assembly in 2007, but they sort of approved it. When it came time for America to approve it, what Obama said was he was happy to announce that the United States was lending its support to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And then the State Department put out this big 16-page white paper that was the most bizarre thing, basically saying, oh, the UN Declaration sets new criteria for human rights for indigenous peoples, which was total nonsense. It didn't set any new criteria. It basically repeated the criteria that's in the UN Declaration on the Rights the Human Rights Declarations. And on the other human rights, you know, there's about nine, I think there's nine human rights, international instruments for human rights, and the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples use the same language. So it was weird. It was weird. Instead of saying, you know, we wholeheartedly endorse the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, it was this weird language of lending our support. So anyway, people, you know, the indigenous peoples accepted that anyway for what it was, and now the issue is implementing it. So back to this year's session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the theme this year was the doctrine of discovery. And that, as people probably know or maybe don't know, a lot of people don't know, had its genesis in 14th, 15th century papal bulls from the Vatican, from the Catholic popes, who wrote these papal bulls basically telling Spain and Portugal, that the monarchs of Spain and Portugal, that they could go out into the world, because they were that was the so-called age of discovery, when people were going out and discovering land. So he told the monarchs of Spain and Portugal that they could go out into the world, and whatever lands that they discovered, in quotation marks, that if those lands were not occupied by Christians, then they had the right to take those lands in the name of the Spanish or Portuguese king, and they had the right to enslave or kill the occupants who were not Christians, or if they could convert them, maybe then they could live. But they could, take their land and all their stuff, land and resources. And when Columbus came here, that's what he did. He slaughtered millions of people, and it was genocide. It was just this incredibly awful, massacre of indigenous
people. And we haven't changed in 300 years?
Yeah.
Or more. 400
more,
years.
500, actually. 500 and more.
500 years.
And we were talking the other night declaration is still being used.
Yes, it is still being used. And the most recent use of it, well, the thing is it's embedded in American law and in the laws of other countries. And it became embedded in Indian law in America in the 1800s in something called the Marshall Trilogy. These were three United States Supreme Court cases. John Marshall was the Chief Justice. And they had to do, at least two of them had to do with, I think two of them had to do with Cherokee land rights. And basically what he said was the indigenous people did not have the right to title to the land by virtue of the fact that they were conquered. And so they only had the right to occupy the land, the right of occupancy. And that's the foundation of American Indian law. And it's pretty horrible. And it led to all this nonsense about, the Interior Department holding land in trust for Indians instead of Indians holding it in trust for themselves, and it has reverberations right down to today. And in fact, in 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court denied the Oneida Indian Nation its land rights in this famous case that had dragged on for years and years and years. And basically it said, yes, we agree that all this land of some 250,000 acres of land in central New York that was the Oneida's aboriginal territory, we agree that it was taken illegally, it was taken from the tribe illegally during the late 18th and throughout the 19th century in violation of various federal laws like the 1790 Non-Intercourse Act, which said, no Indian land could be taken or transferred or given or sold without the approval of Congress. But New York State took all this land and just took it and sold it and profited from it. So the Supreme Court says, yes, we agree. You still own this land. You never ceded it. But too late. We can't do anything about it. They invoked this ancient kind of doctrine, legal principle called laches, L-A-C-H-E-S, which basically says, If time goes by, it gets too late for you to make your claim. So if you steal something and you manage to hold on to it long enough, then, you don't have to give it back. And basically, they quoted Doctrine of Discovery. Amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
It's sad that our law is based on something like that.
It is sad.
And Do you think that this that these meetings at the United Nations are productive?
They are productive. There are issues. There are some issues, like this year there were problems with there were these wonderful young people, young indigenous people who came, and there's what are they called? There's a group. The group is called the Global. I'm going to try to find my story so I can be more clear about this. It's called the Global Indigenous Youth Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And they met, and they did a demonstration. What happened was there were 2,000 delegates, around 2,000 delegates from all over the place came to the meeting. And it's very expensive to come to New York to attend this meeting, and,
mm-hmm.
people have to, they have to spend a lot of money to come and to stay, to have a place to stay and to eat and all this stuff. So the United Nations said, the building is under reconstruction because it's an old building and they're trying to upgrade it, and there's asbestos and all this stuff. So they said, we're only gonna allow one person from each delegation to come into the sessions, and we only have room for 500 people. And you're going to have to get secondary identification. In other words, the badge that you get to wear coming in is not going to be good enough. You have to get it. So the youth said, no, we want full participation, and this is nonsense. So they held a silent vigil outside, and they had their badges removed, taken from them, and they were being threatened to be banned from the UN for 10 years. And so that was an issue. The security guys there were a little over the top, and some of the older people negotiated and got them back in.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not good. They had their.
It sounds credentials. Like they're a little heavy-handed.
Very heavy-handed, and there's video of these kids. They're young people. They're in their young 20s, late teens, 20s, I guess. And they're just standing silently outside holding signs saying, full and effective participation. And these guys came along and took their signs and took their badges, and they were banned for one day, and then they negotiated, their return. But, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the guards also disrupted a Maori gathering. The Maori from Australia or New Zealand were
mm-hmm.
Gathered in a circle, and the security walked right into the circle and told them they couldn't stay there. And one
really?
Of the guards, some reason or other. And one of the guards put his hands on a Maori woman, and he was, and one of the tribal guys told them to take his hands off her, and they'd be finished in a few minutes. But they completely disrupted the circle. And then in another incident, there were some Sami people, from Norway, I guess, and from Norway.
Where are they from?
Norway. They're northern near Norway. I believe they are from Norway. Sami. And S-A-M-I. They were told that they couldn't enter the building because they were dressed in their traditional clothes. which is nice. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So they had to go back to their hotels and change into Western clothes, and then they were allowed in. But
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was very annoying. Very, very annoying.
Now, I know Winona LaDuc spoke once before the United Nations. Was she there this year?
She was not, as far as I know, no. But
I think that was a couple of years back that
she
spoke.
Well, no, that was many years ago, but she...
Yeah.
I
know she's still active, but...
Oh, yeah,
definitely, very active, absolutely.
But, anyway, so where have we come? I'm seeing all these things, Gail. They're building new settlements.
Oh, and they're going back to the Palestinian issue.
Going back to the Palestinian issue. I mean, what's going on over there? Is there any hope
more
for
land grabbing?
Is there any hope for anything to happen for these poor people or no?
Well, it's always hope, right? Otherwise we...
Yeah, I don't know.
Of course, every day I
read something and it just keeps getting worse.
They seem to be just continuing bulldozing houses.
And I was going to read an article tonight where they just gave some joker in the Congress just gave passed a bill to try to do.
He's trying to get a bill passed.
Yeah, to allow Israelis 90-day passes to this country without visas.
To America, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well, you know, America and Israel are joined at the hip. You know, they not the American people, but the American government and the American government.
Yeah, I don't think most people can give a crap about them.
I don't think most people like it.
But the Congress is like tied deep in with them. And
we pay our tax money, which a huge chunk is given to Israel. In return, Israel purchases our Congress.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's how it works.
There was also, I just read an interesting article, a BBC country ratings poll for 2012, and they polled about almost 25,000 people in 22 countries for their perception of their worldview, you know, the worldview of the country's foreign and domestic policies. Israel's perceived unfavorable influence in the world has increased from last year, from 47% to 50%, the Spaniards' negative rating of Israel led the European Union at 74%, followed by France at 65%, Britain and Germany at 68% and 69%.
Wow!
In the Korean Peninsula, the negative view of Israel climbed by 15 notches to 69%. Chinese.
How about the United States? Chinese. That'd be interesting. What did the Chinese say?
Among the Chinese, Israel's negative rating remained stable at 45%, while its positive perception dropped by 9 points to 23%. Let's see, I'm looking for the America, Australia, and Canada, 65% and 59%. The only Western nation with favorable response came from the U.S. at 50% favorable versus 35% unfavorable.
Only 50% favorable.
50% favorable. That was the highest, right?
50%, right?
Yeah, 50%. 50%. 50%. 50%.
50%.
5-0, yeah. And 35% unfavorable, and obviously the rest had no opinion.
Yeah.
Right. And the only Arab country included in the polling, why would they only include one Arab country when the Arab population was
I wonder why, yeah.
The negative perception of Israel increased by 7 points to 85%. That was Egypt. And
Egypt.
It has a, yeah, and
oh,
Egypt
I heard tonight, I guess Egypt wants to rip up their agreement, that total agreement with Egypt, with Israel.
They've been talking about that for quite a while.
They want to do that with this new election. They expect that.
Yeah, well, depends on who's elected, right? If that guy, Amr Moussa, who was the head of the Arab League, is elected, he's a total Westerner. You know, he's a total secular Westerner. If the Muslim Brotherhood does a good showing, there's a good chance that they will. So that would be interesting.
Would be really interesting to see what
happens.
Well,
the truth is that the military really is running that country.
I
think anybody they elect is going to have no power. I don't think it's going to matter.
Yeah.
They're right. The military, interestingly enough, is rewriting the Constitution within the next few months with absolutely no input from anybody, and it doesn't matter what anybody says.
Right. Well, there were huge demonstrations a couple of months ago when they were doing that.
Yeah.
I don't think the Egyptian people are going to back down from.
They've gone this far. For some reason, I have hope that they'll or faith that they'll continue. But it's happening everywhere. Did you see the recent Kissinger article? It's Kissinger saying that he's advising the Bilderbergers that all this upheaval around the world is great for the beginning of the New World Order.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because his motto is order out of chaos. So that chaos means that they can come in and, established martial law.
He says every nation in the country, every nation in the world, he says, is up in arms right now and rebelling. But he says this is a perfect time now to institute the global currency and the global new world order, global government. And it's interesting to see what's going to come out of this NATO summit and this WTO summit, coming up in the end of this month.
This is interesting, especially the currency bit, since Greece is considering going back to its ancient, thousand-year-old currency, the drachma, which I think it would be a lovely thing, personally.
They got to do what Iceland did, and now Iceland is really indicting. They're going for
indicting all their bankers.
Indicting all the bankers, previous bankers, and they're solvent once again because they've thrown off all the debt that they owed those bastards, and
told them to pay the bills. Bad investments, you're responsible.
Exactly. So they threw them all out, and now they're going after them criminally. So I would love to see that happen.
Here,
wouldn't you? I'd love to see it happen in Greece. I'd love to see it in Spain.
If it happens in Greece, I see Ireland and Spain and Portugal following.
I see us following it's time, Gail. No question about it, it's time.
Well, it's funny. I just Googled Henry Kissinger. The only stories I find is that he was patted down by the TSA.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but could you send me that story that you're talking about?
Sure,
it's funny because he's talking about.
I posted it on Facebook, so you should have gotten it.
I'm not a faithful Facebooker, to tell you the truth.
Well, I see you every so often. You post a few things.
Yeah, I go on there and I post a bunch of things and then I get off because.
Yeah, I know. I do that too, but I have it on Facebook.
I'll check it out.
So it should be right on your wall.
Because interestingly, it's interesting that he's talking about the new world, totalitarian new world order, while all these new agers and the Galactic Federation and all these dudes are talking about this new, the beginning is near and, the end of, different religious variations are talking about it in different ways. The Jehovah's Witnesses are talking about the end of man's government on earth and the Indians are talking about these long-held prophecies coming through this year and all this stuff happening.
There's nothing religious about Henry Kissinger. He's an atheist, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Or a devil worshiper.
He's a war criminal, actually.
That too.
A war criminal, yeah. So it's very interesting. It's like the classic battle between good and evil, playing itself out just right in our own little lifetime, right now.
We live in very fascinating times when an accurate history is written of these times. It'll be very fascinating and horrifying to read, I think.
Right, and we shouldn't let this month go by also without mentioning Madeleine Albright's infamous broadcast. The anniversary was on the 12th of May. When she said in 1999, actually it was Leslie Stahl. In an interview with her said, we've heard Madame, whatever they called her, secretary. That half a million children in Iraq died because of our sanctions, and we just wonder, was the price worth it? And Madeleine Albright said, it was really tough, but we think the price was worth it.
Yep.
That
was horrifying when I read 15 that.
15 years ago, right? It was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And
absolutely horrifying.
Can you imagine anybody say how could the price is worth it? They weren't her kids.
No.
Starving to death. No. It wasn't her family.
No.
Selfish witch.
I heard it was a million people that she
there were half a million children. I mean, that was before the war. That was before our
Well, that was before our invasion.
Yeah, that was
from our sanction.
Yeah.
See, I don't believe in those kinds of things. It just hurts. It hurts children and
What are the
terrible
sanctions that we're doing to Iran and all these other countries we have sanctions against? You know, what the hell is going on? You know, I mean, they can justify it, and Hillary is walking around like some, you know, saint. You know, and her poll, she supposedly has become more popular than Obama right now. You know?
Yeah. Well, how about this for a thought? He pulls her in as his vice president for November.
He what?
What did you say?
Silence.
He wants to be vice president?
I said, how's this for a thought, running this up the flagpole? He pulls Hillary Clinton in to run as his vice president.
Well, I read today that possibility is out because he's stuck with Biden, and he's sticking with Biden. But I'll tell you the truth. I think if the polls start switching toward Romney or even Paul, I think you're going to see him switch to Hillary Clinton as a VP.
And Paul said he was not going to campaign anymore today.
Oh, he's campaigning. He's not running in the primaries. He's pulling out of the primaries.
Because he has enough votes to go into the convention.
Right.
Oh,
and what
okay.
He wants to put his money into the convention because he doesn't have the billions of dollars, the billion dollars that Obama and Romney have, you know. Mm.
To run in all these states.
So that what he's trying to do is concentrate on Tampa and on the conventions and swinging delegates over that way. But, you know.
He's still running.
I think it was a mistake for him to drop out of the primaries, but, you know, hey, you know, I'm not his manager, right? So, you know.
Didn't consult us.
No, and I would have advised against it because he was winning in those recent conventions or primaries. So, I don't know. But, Gail, so what do you think the fate of Palestine is going to become this year? Do you think anything will get resolved at all? Or do you think there'll just be a complete war with Iran, and Iran will take care of the situation?
Well, you know, if they go to war with Iran, that's going to be...
It'll be all over.
Disaster.
Yeah, it's done for them.
Yeah.
You know, probably done for us, too.
Done for everybody, yeah.
Yeah.
So, can't imagine
that's
that.
A sad thought.
Yeah, can't imagine that. I can't imagine
that. on a positive note, I want to thank you, Gail, for being on. You're always a great guest and give
thanks.
Us all kinds of good information.
And thank you for letting us know about what happened at the United Nations with the indigenous people. And I'm sorry that it wasn't more successful. They have these meetings every year, but...
It was overall successful. I mean, even if the United Nations gets in the way, it's still successful. Just one last thing I should mention. I don't know if you read this, but there was a New York judge who last week put a temporary block on the indefinite detention provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act.
Yes, I saw that today. Actually yesterday, and I was like surprised, and I was glad to hear that, but. How far that's going to go.
We don't really know.
You know, it's an injunction,
no.
but...
We don't know.
It's the first step, anyway.
Yeah.
So let's hope something happens with that.
No.
Yeah.
I don't really know the background as to how that came about, so I have to find that article.
Oh, it was Chris Hedges. Chris Hedges filed a complaint.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, I'll send you the article.
Okay.
You know what? You know what? I'm going to send this to you. Because I was looking at it tonight. It's 2 hours of Chris Hedges, but he talks about he doesn't have too much good to say about the situation.
Right.
But it's on book notes, I believe it was C-SPAN or something, and
is it Calling All Rebels or something?
I'm trying to get it here. Hang on a second.
Leo's looking for it. Just hold on.
There it is. It's called Chris Hedges, Alexandra, In-Depth by Mox News.
Brace yourself. The American Empire is over and the descent is going to be horrifying.
Yeah. Mm. It's almost a three-hour interview. It's almost 3 hours with them on this.
Okay. The C-SPAN.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. But I can send that over to you if you'd like. Maybe ever get it.
Sure, thanks.
And, all right.
Okay, well, again, thanks for being with us, and I hope you come back on in a few more weeks.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Bye-bye.
Author and journalist Chris Hedges, the Pulitzer Prize-winning foreign correspondent, took calls, emails, and tweets on topics such as war, religion.
Went on by itself.
Well, you had it. You pulled it up. So, in any event, you can. Leo's going to forward that to Gail because she's interested in listening to that.
Yeah.
And Chris Hedges always has a lot of interesting things to say. But I really appreciate the fact that Gail was on to update us on what was happening through the UN and the Palestinian issue. So we have about 10 minutes, Leo.
Okay. I'm sending it over right over to you, Gail, so see if I can do that. Maybe I can. I'll get it to you one way or the other. And in the meantime, she's still on the line, actually, and if you didn't want to listen to us, we have a... I wanted to end tonight's program with an article here that kind of, what is it?
Which one were you looking for? So while Leo was waiting for that.
Yeah,
we're still here.
Oh, hi.
I didn't know whether you were still on or not.
Oh, you're trying to get off. I can do that for you. I just hang up.
Okay.
All
thanks.
Right.
Okay, bye.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Poor Gail, she couldn't hang up. We had to hang up for her on our end. I didn't realize that.
I didn't either.
We learned something new after we've been doing that all this time. Poor people can't hang up themselves.
So anyway.
Now, there's something. Connecticut cop. Go back.
Pulled down and cop who photographed him.
Cut interstate.
I had a better one. I just wanted to, for some reason, I can't think of this.
Well, balance. Time is going by here, Leo.
Yeah. Here we go. Not so organic. USDA accused of conspiracy with agribusiness insiders. And watchdog group that
Let's
handed...
Let's go to the article because... Other,
can I read this?
That might be in the center of the article. It's better to go to the whole article.
All right. Okay. USDA accuses of conspiracy, accused of conspiracy with agribusiness, which is true.
Not surprised.
Not surprised, but kind of interesting. It's not a big article.
No.
The watchdog group that handles issues dealing with the American agricultural industry is lashing out at the federal government for allegedly corrupting the advisory board that oversees organic foodstuffs in the United States. The Cornucopia Institute from the state of Wisconsin is calling out the U.S. Department of Agriculture in their latest report by saying that the government panel that determines what is and isn't considered organic is stacked with federal insiders with an alternative agenda. And according to the findings in the Organic Watergate paper released this week, the USDA's National Organic Standards Board has taken a turn for the worse in recent years, hiring staffers in bed with corporate entities that aren't as concerned with protecting consumers as they are with making a buck. This is the proverbial fox watching the organic chicken coop. And the NOSB has established in order to oversee and monitor any and all synthetic ingredients used in the farming or production of so-called organic food to assure that it is not a threat to human health or the environment, as well as a recommendation policy and modifications to the regulations governing organic agriculture and food processing. In the U.S., without proper oversight, it is feared by some that a slippery slope will effectively erode the USDA's original standards and allow for big business and the government corporate colleagues to remove the rules that currently exist to guide consumers. Those of us in the industry who are committed to the value of wholesome, nutritious foods that have been the hallmark of the organic industry need the NOSB and the USDA to carefully and impartially review synthetic ingredients like carrageenan, Eden Foods like carrageenan.
Who are you reading?
Board members stacked into the NOSB board by government officials aren't as concerned, however, stressed the Institute. Despite carrageenan being recognized as a possible carcinogen by both the World Health Organization's International and Research for Cancer and all a number of other organizations, agribusiness big shots battling for the government have offered independent analysis to the board that argue in favor of the substance, which used to be found and placed in conventional foods until its dangers were discovered. I've seen that in everything. Carrageenan. The organic community came together and actually asked the government in order to maintain a level playing field and organic integrity to regulate our industry. How many other industries have ever asked the federal government to tough regulations and enforcement? Although not a constitutional crisis on par with what happened during the Nixon administration, the USDA's blatant disregard for the requirements laid out by the Organic Food Production Act of 1990 and the intent of the Congress is illegal and has inappropriately favored corporate agribusiness over the interests of ethical businesses, farmers, and consumers, reads the study. However, elsewhere, its authors claim that the USDA stacked the board with agribusiness representatives, something that they see is not just illegal but ongoing, and has stretched over the past three administrations, the Institute claims.
Oh,
upon publishing the Organic Watergate, the Cornucopia Institute is asking that the USDA reexamine recent hires to the NOSB board and implement stricter guidelines in who it staffs. And that makes a lot of sense, folks. But you know,
who knows if it's going to happen?
Yeah, that's the sad part. And you know, this article you had to get from Russian TV. Absolutely unbelievable.
Well, did you hear anything about what was happening at the United Nations on our TV news? Did they say they were a forum on indigenous issues at the United Nations?
No, they don't cover that crap. Nah, they don't cover any of that stuff. They don't get into that. They look at the American protests and labor finance spokesman, German austerity. But yeah, the only reason I brought them up was because at least they mentioned it. You know?
Yeah.
Serious. At least they mentioned it. So in the next minute or two that we have, let me see what I got here.
In Quebec, a huge protest supports striking students, denounces Bill 78.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're raising their tuition, too.
That happened.
Well, it's Bill 78. Let's just see what it is if you go back.
Well, there was another thing about the tremendous protests in Canada. This one I thought should be really interesting. J.P. Morgan's Chase's biggest campaign contributor to the senator, who's chairing the investigation of J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
Well, we didn't read it.
No.
You think we should read it?
Well, you could go to the article and just.
We can just touch on it briefly. Holding your breath about the fallout for J.P. Morgan Chase's derivative losses yesterday, if you believe Politico, you can exhale. And Senator Banking Committee Chair Tim Johnson of South Dakota announced his panel would call J.P. Morgan Chase Jamie Dimon to testify.
It's a good thing that the watchdog is barking, but we'd all better watch closely to see if it will bite. Here's what Politico didn't tell you. Political money lines tabulation of PAC contributions show that the securities and financial firms have given more money to Johnson than any other sector in the last three election cycles. In the current cycle, for example, almost two-thirds of his $361,582 in PAC money comes from such firms. So guess what? I think he's going to be strict.
I don't think he was bought and paid for. I really don't think so.
And we've come right to the end of the show. It's 8:59. I want to thank you folks for being with us tonight, and we want to thank our guest, Gail Corey Townsend, for being with us. And Leo will be with you tomorrow night.
Yeah. And so join me tomorrow night, and good night.
Good night, folks.